to Don't Be All Like Uncool, a very Bravo podcast. I'm Elizabeth, and I'm joined by my lovely friend and co-host, Mr. Alex Morand. Hi, Alex.
Don't call me seasons 1 through 2 Luann, because I'm not down for the count.
Okay, my note to myself for this week was I wasn't going to get as excited for your taglines. I was going to try to keep it in, but I don't think I can. That was so great. Thank you.
Oh, I thought that would have helped that plan.
No, I loved it. I've also been watching early Roni, and I'm on season 3, and the Jill Bethany drama has consumed my life. And I know that this is like 10 years old at this
point. But still, no spoilers. Please, for me, no spoilers.
That's all I could think about. Okay, really fast. What do we think of Jill? Jill's
I
Aaron.
Love Jill's
when
Aaron.
I was watching Jill, I couldn't imagine life without her. And I knew because I watched it, like, after the seasons had come out, that she was leaving. And then she left, and I was fine. Is that bad?
And then she came back for season 12.
And I didn't need her anymore.
Alex, what's your hot take on Jill?
I love her. It's similar to Julia, where, like, she's not exactly missed. But when I am watching those old ones, she's just, I can't imagine those early seasons without her. Her dynamic with Bethany is amazing.
I know. And then you're through season 3 though, right, Alex?
I haven't started season 3.
Oh, get ready. Buckle up, Buttercup. And we're also joined by my lovely sister and our co-host, Ms. Julia Baker. Hey, Jules.
Holiday cheer is here, and I'm slaying it.
I love it.
Ooh. I've been online shopping all day.
You know, Santa Claus can't get COVID, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Fauci told me.
Oh, did he?
He can't get COVID. Yeah, he announced
this. He told you and all the little boys and little girls in the world.
No, it was just a direct line to Alex.
Because I could not take Christmas getting canceled. So I reached out to him personally.
Amazing. All right. When there's a will, there's a way to marry your grandpa. So I usually watch Salt Lake City the next day because I'm a little baby and I don't like to stay up late. And I could not find it. Most of the time I watch it on Hulu and I wasn't able to. So I desperately text Julia, who sent me to a link where I watched it. But to get away with not being flagged for copyright, they raised the octave of all the voices. So they all sounded like chipmunks. And put it in inverse.
You watch it that way, you know, if you clicked on the link directly below, they all sounded normal.
Oh my God. And there was a commercial every 4 minutes and they were all in Spanish. And I just wanted to let you guys know, did you know that Ford is having a Black Friday sale for zero APR for 6 años?
Just letting you know. I love that this is like, you said all that like it was your explanation for your tagline. You just breezed right
past. It was. I gotta watch me some Salt Lake. It was my love of Salt Lake kept me with the chipmunks.
And I would also like to say the link below had no commercials.
Son of a bitch. Well, you guys don't know what it's like to hear the fight between Seth and Meredith in... Well, I just don't know why you chipmunks. Can't be transparent.
Oh, man. Them sped up must be fascinating.
It was wild.
It must just be sound like a normal conversation.
Alex, it wasn't sped up.
Oh, they
the
were just high?
The voices were all just higher. It was this...
They all had a Whitney voice.
Oh, Whitney's voice was like, dogs were howling.
That's a dread.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Like a baby with vocal fry.
If you were 4 years older, you couldn't hear it.
Yeah. That's a dress, the elephant in the room.
Should we just jump right into Salt Lake?
Yes, please.
All right, let's go for it. All right, this week on Salt Lake, we wrap up the Jen Meredith party, and then the girls go skiing. That last little chunk of the party was some of the most fun I've ever had on Bravo TV. We start with Lufa, Big Bird, and JoJo Siwa walking into a party.
Walking into a bathroom.
Walking into a bathroom, yeah. What a wild time. So basically, Jen and Mary make up.
And they don't really make up.
I guess they put a pin in it, you could say. But
I mean, Jen's still outraged. She says that what Mary said to her is like looking at a baby with cancer and saying, "You smell like cancer."
Is that implying that Jen is a baby, or is it?
I thought in that whole scene, Heather, she was a gem. Jen says, Mary. She's just running around my house looking like a Christmas tree. And Heather goes, it's a loofah, honey. A loofah, referring to her non-couture Valentino dress. And then Jen says, I don't just let anyone into my circle. And Heather goes, it is an absolute privilege to be in your circle, Jen.
I love Heather.
I also love when she's like,
cracks me up.
Well, do you want to talk to her about it? And then perfectly on cue, Mary just walks in. And then she goes, well, here she is.
Yeah, right on cue.
Did you guys notice last episode that Mary had one weird fingerless Michael Jackson glove on?
Yeah, it's, on one hand. Yeah.
I didn't notice that last episode, but this episode, it's like a black leather, doesn't even go up to her knuckles, but it looks so stiff. Is that a hand brace? Like, does she have a medical brace on, which would be pretty perfect for this hospital smell discussion?
They're in a constant prayer position.
Gotta keep it firm. So then we can skip right out of that bathroom because I really don't care what's happening in there. And we can go into my favorite ongoing discussion of this episode, which is the big tequila showdown. So Lisa, who owns the tequila company,
Vita Tequila,
gifted the tequila, she says, for 500 people and the bartenders. And we later find out also the mixers. So that's, you know, that's a lot. She gives all of that to Whitney as kind of a gift for her vow renewal.
So first off, this is wild because as I think you both know, I think Lisa is a bitch. But she was actually made into a sympathetic character by Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
Whitney, who does not invite her to the vow renewal and just calls and asks for a handout. And then is like upset and throws so much shade. Like, we didn't even have enough tequila to last till 6 p.m.
And Whitney approaches Lisa under the guise of, I just wanted to let you know the bartenders that you sent to me for free were super unprofessional. And she's describing what can only be thought of as like, I'm picturing Jax and Tom from Vanderpump just throwing them back and starting fights with servers.
Definite season 2 Schwartz on his one day on the job.
Yep, I'm picturing that in my head. And then we get a black and white flat cutaway to the bartenders who are unloading boxes and rearranging glasses.
They bartending.
Bartending.
Also, and Lisa did a good job pointing this out, that it was at a basement wedding reception with a stripper pole in the middle. It's not like this event would need the most professional of bartenders.
No.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like Whitney needs a plot line.
Oh, yeah. And her plot line is to make Lisa look good. You have to try so hard. Congratulations, Whitney. Success.
And
you know what I call this confrontation? Hmm. The Sundance Queen versus the Pole Dance Queen.
Oh!
We had no evidence that this party was out of control. The only thing that we get to back up what Whitney is saying at all is we get a cut to Whitney being in a hall away from the bartenders, sweeping up broken glass, being like, there's broken glass everywhere. Was she expecting the bartenders to like also be busboys? What? I don't get what her problem was.
No, she was expecting house cleaner bartenders. That was not the gift. Lisa did not include a housekeeper to come the next day for a party she was not even invited to.
And it makes it sound like tequila was the only option available to drink at this at the wedding.
It might have been.
That's insane.
So when Whitney confronts Lisa about not enough tequila / bartenders at the party, Lisa gets so upset, she just wants to leave, and she does. And then she later calls Whitney and threatens if Whitney continues to bash her brand, Vita Tequila, like this, she will expose something. And the best thing, actually, Whitney might be smarter than we give her credit for, because she just exposes herself right away, giving Lisa like absolutely no leverage in the situation. But pull of the room are Whitney and her husband swingers. I would like to say 100% yes.
Yes.
Hadn't crossed my mind. Let me stew on this.
And
Wait, had you really not thought of Alex? This was a major plot point.
Hold on. Give me a second. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, consensus, yes. Bowl of the room. Well, first, Whitney brings this up, that Lisa is going to expose her for being a swinger, and she's like, and I'm not even going to say the S word, because then
this whole conversation will become about me and whether or not my husband and I are swingers.
The only people we hear calling Whitney swingers is Whitney. She brings it up like four times.
I love how Heather, who's also having a Lisa issue, like has to remind herself what a swinger is.
You mean 2001 Jennifer Coolidge?
she has that fun energy to her. I'm just afraid that she's got nothing but heartbreak ahead.
I do too. Yeah.
Especially with her relationship with Jen, as what was hinted in the first episode. But yeah. I love her. She's fun. She's kind of like the Ashley so far, in that she's just kind of like really super supportive. But when someone fucks with her, like we see later in the episode, Lisa.
Yeah.
Totally stands her ground. It's cool.
Do you know what I appreciate too? Is she was being so honest and upfront. And I feel like a lot of the fights that we see on Housewives have this really weird fake underline, like kind of film on top of it. Like anytime, I don't know, I'm just thinking of like Leah and Ramona. Every time Ramona has a problem with Leah, she comes up with this bizarre excuse that she doesn't like the tattoos, she doesn't like the swearing, but it's not about that. Heather's just very honest, like, hey, you hurt my feelings acting like you didn't know me. I don't know why. And now you're acting like you didn't act like you didn't know me. Like, I don't get what's going on.
Yeah, she rightly calls Lisa dismissive and arrogant. And then when she refers to Lisa's telling everyone that Heather was a good time girl in college, Heather goes, that story was flattering, but false. It's just, I really like Heather.
Because she wishes that was true.
She does. That was her dream. Heather also taught me this episode what the thumbs up emoji means, which I have been completely ignorant of. I was scrolling through all my texts to everybody, and I send double thumbs up to everybody, like I'm giving them a rave review for a movie.
Julia's a thumbs up enthusiast, to say the least.
I don't even know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to switch myself up to like the triple pink heart emoji.
No,
what does that mean?
Listen, this is a made up text
code.
Thank
you. Thank you.
I mean, but now it's not. Now this show has erased that. So now it does mean fuck you. But before the show, it was not a thing.
So if I know you don't watch Bravo, I can send you the thumbs up. But if you do watch Bravo, like for you two, I can't ever send you the thumbs up again. I think I've even done it actually.
Oh, I'd be so
after.
Fucking pissed off.
Or only send us thumbs up.
Only judgy Mormons could take such a positive emoji and make it so dark and hateful.
You text me the thumbs up. Of course that meant fuck you. And then I love that Heather's like, what are you talking about? It's a thumbs up emoji. And then we get her talking head and the producer's like, did you mean fuck you by the thumbs up? And she's like, yes. Duh.
Darn right I did.
I love Heather. And you know what? A big.
She gets a good thumbs up from me.
Yeah, big thumb.
a double thumbs up.
I'm not on Lisa's. Lisa's probably my least favorite out of this cast. And you know what? I know we're jumping ahead to the end of the episode, but at that dinner where all of this is kind of coming to a head, do you know who else looked really put together and very wise and sane?
Mary.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
Because she's trying to get all of them to go to her church.
She mediated an argument very successfully, I thought.
Yeah.
Lisa's saying about Whitney, like, oh, I don't care what you have to say. And she's like, well, she's letting you know how she feels. Why don't you listen to why she feels that way?
And then
way?
She goes, like, and Lisa, oh, what do you have to say? Like, she's just like...
A mediator between God and the people?
Yes.
Not so much, because she is God.
Don't get it confused.
Don't get it twisted.
For someone so high and mighty, she does have a hard time walking up two flights of stairs.
So when the gang goes skiing, had some of the most bizarre parts of this episode where, again, like Julia, I kind of forget that we're watching TV and it's just not me and my ladies hanging out. When Whitney is talking to Heather and she said, so you invited Lisa to come skiing with us? And Heather's looking at her like, well, she's a part of the group, and kind of gives her the eyes. Yeah, we're contractually obligated to hang out with each other, Whitney. Like, did you not remember we're on a TV show?
Poor Whitney.
And then we finally get to go watch them go skiing.
Whitney, and Meredith, and Heather all are great snow sport people.
Actually know how to, yeah. They
Jen had a nice indoor lesson.
That was before. So
with like with some like cheerleaders.
Yeah, with
that
18
were like,
on payroll cheerleaders.
All of her assistants. Yeah.
Move it.
And
move
she
it
set
down
up
that hill.
All her stiletto shoes and is like rollerblading. Like in between them.
Jen created an indoor obstacle course to practice.
It looked like a mini golf course that she set up where she was going.
And then all of her assistants are in a line chanting on the side. When I watched that again, this is one of those times I thought, Alex is going to love
this.
Well,
yeah, it's like five assistants, as you said.
Our three Bunny Hill girls were dressed to the nines and could not ski for shit. And I put myself in that category. Like, I would have the outfit.
Dressed to the nines, Julia.
There's no way I can ski. I like how Mary justified her Chanel snowsuit by saying, Chanel doesn't give you wedgies.
I like that train of thought. I was really surprised because, you know, the whole talk is like, if you live in Salt Lake City, which is famous for snow and snow sports, you have to know how to ski. You have to know how to snowboard. So I just assumed all these women could. And I thought this is such a difference between any other housewife show we've ever seen, that all of these women can do this athletic thing. And skiing and snowboarding is hard. So when you see him showing up, I was really surprised to see how Mary, Lisa, and Jen were dressed. Just because they were dressed like they were going to a photo
shoot.
Like
Black Diamond, baby.
Yeah, and then Jen says, when they see this picture, they're going to think I look like I'm going to go on the Black Diamond. She's wearing a leopard print skin tight bodysuit with a huge Mr. Mistopheles puffy chest piece and fuzzy mittens. And I thought, there's no way she can ski in that. But, I mean, she must know because she lives in Salt Lake. Nope. Turns out she's never skied before.
That was only so inside. Funny. Her, only the two inside ski instructors things. Started off trying really hard to teach them how to ski. But then when Mary's doing snow angels, they go, oh, snow angels. Great.
You're doing great.
I think they recognize that she's a divine being with the angel imagery. So we can't talk to this deity. Wouldn't it be great if the OC ladies surfed?
Oh my gosh.
I'm trying to think of other things, like regional like activities.
Yeah, there's no way those girls can get on board.
What are the other franchises?
Beverly Hills, they all know how to shop. So nailed it.
New York, they all know how to ride the subway.
Do they? Have we ever seen them try?
I don't know if they take the subway.
I don't know if Luann has ever been in a subway before.
No, darling. The Countess never takes a subway.
So another part of this episode that really struck me was the dinner between Seth and Meredith. So Meredith and her husband go out to this dinner, and I thought we were going to see a nice little date. Nope, it immediately turns into her husband roasting her and saying like, hey, how many people did you tell that we were separated? I thought we were going to keep that charade going.
Let's address the elephant in the room.
That's how I heard it.
This was very shocking given the info you gave last episode about their behind the scenes drama. I thought they were really going to drag this out and kind of like reveal it like maybe midway through the season.
Episode two.
But for it to come episode two after episode one that like presents them as a happy family and like the petal.
He did give her a rose petal casket for her birthday.
Yes. Well, but I mean like they present it as though like everything's fine. Mm-hmm. So for it to happen two episodes in was alarming. I was shocked, even having known that there were problems.
For this dinner, I read between the lines and I created my own reality, and I'm pretty sure I've nailed it.
Right.
Okay, so here we go. So I think Meredith wanted to present them as a very happy family for this. Mm-hmm. And I believe Meredith might be having outside relations from their marriage.
100%.
That was heavily implied.
And I feel like Seth is a jealous husband. And he's like, nope, let's put this all out there. And he did a good job doing that. And Meredith is just silent during all questioning. At this moment in time, mm-hmm. she does not recall.
Yeah. I can neither confirm nor deny.
So you think that this him bringing this up over the dinner was a surprise to her?
Oh, 100%.
That's great.
I mean, you couldn't tell in her face at all. I think she's heavily Botoxed. But like, yes, I think she was taken aback. And then you look at my phone, it means that you'll care. There's no way you're getting your hands on my phone. The whole phone thing was like, oh, there's like 2 a.m. texts that are coming in. And mm-hmm. Seth is aware and Meredith will.
But then that was interrupted by my favorite part of every Bravo episode, which
ordering
is
the server.
A wild amount of time spent listening to them order the food, what the food is, the drinks, they saying the names of the drinks.
Well, I mean, Bravo has a bad rep for like breaking a lot of glasses and plates every time they go anywhere. So I feel
so
like when
really
producers go in
to
they're like, We'll promote it. We'll put 7 drinks and 4 menu items
and
on
we'll describe
television.
Each of them.
It'll
actually,
reach,
Julia, that's a pretty good
7 million households.
Wow.
That is the only explanation for it. Because otherwise, it makes no sense for it to happen 5 times every episode of every Bravo show you watch.
And we'll replace all broken stemware.
We have never seen a Bravo anyone go to a restaurant when we don't hear what they order. Even if it's like on Southern Charm and they get garlic fries and a Diet Coke, we take the moment to pause the conversation and have Shep order that. Like, we always hear it. It does always make me really hungry. Seth did something last episode and this episode that got progressively more and more strange. Last episode, he makes a crack about how he and Meredith don't have sex in the form of, well, we have everything except for a sex life, something like that. And this episode, he has also made another joke about them not having sex and then immediately jumps into who knows that we're separated. So I thought that was kind of weird. Like, so you're expecting to have sexual relationship with a woman that you're separated from? Are they on the pathway to getting divorced or are they on the pathway to fixing their relationship?
I think he's laying out the problems within their relationship. When he says, thank you for the eye contact, you're always on your phone. And Meredith says, I haven't touched my phone all day. And he goes, well, your phone's getting equal treatment as your husband. What a bummer. I want to get eyes on the guy Meredith was seeing.
I do too. That's what I was racking my brain, like trying to visualize the type of guy that she would be seeing.
Not Seth.
And it looked a lot like a guy with like a sort of like black mop on his head that maybe is the father of Whitney.
Nice transition.
That was the word. I was trying to find a way.
Later in the episode, we see Whitney working out in her strip aerobics. Like, she has a pole in her weightlifting room. And
the pole dance queen.
Yeah, and pole dancing is an insane workout. Like, you have to have crazy upper body strength. And she's got guns, so good on Whitney. And then we go into her kitchen where she's preparing the cheesiest of grilled cheese. And her dad walks in, Steve, with his Pete Wins wig on.
Straight out of Whoville.
Yeah, is that real hair or no? Wig?
No,
hair.
That's a wig.
It's a wig, right?
I mean, he's a salon guy.
He has a whole salon's worth of equipment in his garage. And we learned that he used to have
a hair care line.
A school as well. He used to be the owner of a cosmetology school.
Insane. That is the worst wig I've ever seen. How?
I mean, hey, there is the possibility that that is his natural hair. And he doesn't have a choice. And he started his salon in order to try to fix his own hair. And it never worked. Aww. He's still trying. That's why he can't get out of the game.
Whitney's dad's been addicted to painkillers for 10 years. But Whitney's dad did say something profound. And I took pen to paper and wrote it down. This is what he says about his recovery. I prayed for rain. And now I have to deal with the mud.
Oh, I actually really like that. That's very cool.
Very, very sobering moment in the episode.
Yeah, it made me like him more.
I think it sounds like her and her dad need to take a little trip to Mary's church.
Yes, I agree. I am
Hallelujah.
So
Amen.
Happy that is in our future.
Where was Brooks this episode?
Seriously, where was Brooks?
There's like a shot of Brooks and Mary talking at the birthday party in the beginning, and I kill to hear what those two were talking
about.
That's
all about. I want Brooks on a mic 24/7. And I think in our next episode, it looks like Jen is going to offend Brooks. Yes?
I hope we get some Brooks. But just to clear it up for our audience, we only watched episode 2 this week. Episode 3 was early released, but we're saving it because we're all together and we're going to record.
So, yeah.
So
yes.
Listeners, hold off on that one. Don't watch it yet.
So next week, we will be in person, socially distanced for the holidays. So we will be watching episode 3 of Salt Lake City next week and then recording immediately after. So it's going to be a little messy, but I think it'll be fun.
Hoot nanny.
Let's get into some Potomac. This week on Potomac, the ladies continue to explore Portugal, which is not a city, despite what Karen says, and Ashley and Candace rehash their relationship.
It's also not Portland, no matter what Karen says.
It's also not Portland. I don't think Karen knows where they are.
Doesn't she also say this feels so European? Who is it that says that?
That's sadly Dr. Wendy.
Oh, well, Wendy says that.
Oh, no. None of the ladies know where they are. And Ashley started last episode speaking Spanish.
And Robin thought that they were in South America at first. It's just a mess.
Nobody knows where Portugal
is. No one knows where Portugal is. But Whitney does know the flag.
I thought these were learned people. I thought that they knew their shit.
Or at least, like, look it up. Wendy's sitting in her bed learning how to say, I want more punani in Portuguese.
But it's not called punani, so she's not even saying the right drink.
Poncha?
Poncha.
In fairness to Wendy, I think she is saying the right name. I don't think she's saying punani.
I know, it was me who messed up. I clearly don't know where I am or what I'm drinking.
Well, I gotta start off with our Detective Doty mid-episode award to our Karen, because she, at the opening dinner, says, hey, Giselle, I saw you in front of that jewelry store on Instagram the other day. And I thought, ooh, Juan must be joining her because she's going to propose to Robin. Totally ruining the surprise.
Yeah, I thought it was like, at first I was upset at Karen for saying this because, like, she knows Juan hasn't proposed yet. So why would she out Juan and Giselle this way? But then what is Giselle doing?
Posting
herself outside of a jewelry store on Instagram. She's like leaving the breadcrumbs for Karen to find. It's just like, oh,
and those breadcrumbs were not a subtle in the background blurry sign. It's a boomerang of Giselle strutting in front of the jewelry store with the logo clearly in the background.
And when Giselle confronts Karen about this, she kind of takes her aside to this part of a market that they're at where there's a bunch of like peppers hanging, and it produces one of my favorite Bravo asides, which is Karen looking at the peppers and she goes, these peppers, very vibrant, very ready.
I love Karen.
Like she thought Giselle was just bringing her over there to like comment on the peppers.
This episode was full of little jazzy moments, just so many gems. One of my favorite moments was Giselle decides that they need to initiate Wendy into the show by pranking her. And this is an elaborate setup that lasts quite a bit of time.
Oh, yeah. It felt like half an hour.
Yes. Giselle's master plan is she has brought these rubber spiders and snakes.
I got the critters.
That she carried in her clutch all evening, though they were going back to the hotel and her room is very near Wendy's. It's just so fast.
So she brings Ashley in and she's like, we're going to prank Wendy. We're going to put these in her bed. And Ashley's like, okay. And then they go to dinner. Hours later, they come back. Turns out Giselle has had them in her purse the whole time. As Julia said, very not necessary. They go up to the room. They put them in Wendy's bed. And then, I like this, they do the fake out prank. So after it's time for them to go to bed, Wendy goes into her room. And around the corner, Giselle, who is it? Giselle, Robin, and Ashley.
Yeah, are hiding in the closet.
All hiding. And jump out and scare her. And they're like, ha ha ha, that was the prank. But oh no, it was a ruse. Because the real prank is what is waiting for her in her bed. So the ladies all exit. And then this is, I just thought it was so cute. And it was so, yes, we're on a TV show. They're like, wait, we need to leave a producer in there. Mm-hmm. A producer needs to say.
And then they all sit in like a semicircle around her door watching a monitor.
In these beautiful ball gowns.
The second scream is where it must have been so, so worth it for them. I mean, for her to still be scared after seeing the initial spider. That is a prankster's dream.
She gave a good reaction. And it was nice that they gave Wendy this little treat because other than this, Wendy just sat at a bar and got drunk the whole episode by herself.
I like Wendy's style.
Speaking of setups, I have a question for you because we get to see the final like pics from the photo shoot of the embellished photo shoot of Robin's hatline. And
where all the girls participated.
Poor Karen doesn't make the cut for her amateur photo shoot.
I didn't think they were that bad.
Yeah, I agree.
You're advertising a hat, not like her face. You're not advertising makeup. You're advertising a hat. So the side profile where the hat's in focus
is
works.
This because Robin wants to spend more camera time on embellished?
Oh.
Is that why we're doing this? Because I have exhibit A for us. Are you ready? This is Robin on her own website.
It's like the exact same picture.
It's worse. It's worse than the Karen one.
Please know it's Robin tilting the hat forward so you can barely see her face exactly like Karen was doing. And I thought Karen looked beautiful.
Detective Doty Award winner Julia.
Sorry, we got to take it away from who did we give it to last time?
You get Karen. Karen had it.
Oh, I gave it to Karen.
I'm also sad that Robin is being ageist about this. Robin thinks her hats are fun and youthful, and that's not Karen.
You know what, Robin? We were going to buy hats for the pod and have little matching hats, and I think we're going to have to take our business elsewhere because we don't support that. We're Karen stans over here.
That's right. Karen's my number one.
I would also say no one but people who watch Potomac are going to be purchasing these embellished hats. Put Karen on your website. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not like they would be on the website and be like, who's this? Which they wouldn't say anyway, because the photos are fine.
Yes, they were fine. Also, kind of did Candace dirty. I thought this was weird when we were watching the photo shoot happen, and I couldn't believe it was the final photo. They had Candace pose in this really cool doorway, and there's a sign like, on security cam, warning you're being filmed. And I'm like, oh, they're going to Photoshop that out. Nope,
well,
they left it.
Well, it was an amateur photo shoot. Okay, guys, would you go in a wicker basket toboggan in Portugal?
Absolutely not.
Oh, I feared for their lives.
I kind of did also.
Well, the fact that there are cars roaring past them was insane to me.
And they're all like, there's cars? As they're clearly on a road.
So the ladies do in a little excursion that Ashley's planned where she's like, oh, it's going to be like a little sleigh, like a little chariot that's made out of wicker. And they are on the side of the road. I'm like, okay, they're going to be on a track, kind of like in closed down ski areas. They'll have like little roller coasters set up where you can kind of just zoom down the mountain. Nope. These are wicker chairs that guys push you down a road with cars. And then to turn you, they jump off and push you really hard. Like the game we all played when we were little kids, like sliding down things in cardboard boxes. That's what this is.
No, I know as much about Portugal as all these other ladies do, but is this like a traditional Portuguese pastime?
I don't think so, but I'd like to think it is.
I don't think you could have gotten me in one, which makes me sound lame because I'm clearly the worst party pooper on Potomac.
Thank God they survived. Thank Mary. They survived. Thank Mary. Very thrilling. I do. I mean, none of them knew what was happening. They were looking at their phone the whole time.
I know. They're all recording. We're in Portland. Woo! Like we talked about during Salt Lake, the food that was ordered this episode was plentiful. Many dinners were had.
Can I say my favorite? I mean, speaking of what we were talking about in Salt Lake, my favorite Bravo unnecessary drink ordering moment was when they were at the bar, and I think it's who orders it? I think Giselle, maybe? It doesn't matter. One of them orders red wine.
It was Ashley.
And they take a long moment for Ashley to order red wine. Pause. Bartender go, we have Cabernet Sauvignon. Is that okay? Yeah, that's good. Okay. Like 20 seconds spent on that.
Thanks for showing us that.
It's like, not exactly. I mean, that kind of goes against the theory of their promoting, like.
Yeah, no brand.
Restaurants and pubs.
Is Ashley going to come up with a Cabernet Sauvignon blend a la Ramona Pinot Grigio?
Oh my God. That'd be incredible.
Is this a setup?
Well, Alex, that was your favorite ordering moment. My favorite ordering alcohol moment was when Giselle says in her talking heads moment, Karen doesn't talk about her relationship unless there's alcohol in front of her. Cut to a waiter going around with wine and Karen saying, can I have just like a tiny drop? I'm not drinking alcohol, but just a tiny drop in this glass so I can toast. He says, yes. He pours alcohol into the glass. The second the glass is put down in front of her, she says, so Ray finally appreciates me. She doesn't even pick up the glass. The alcohol enters her line of sight and Karen starts spilling the beans. But I thought it was kind of sad that from Karen's perspective, like that Ray didn't appreciate her and didn't see her as anything other than his wife, like not like a partner. And now he's finally seeing her. I don't know. Like they've been married for like 25 years, right? Or more.
Give or take.
Yeah, give or take. Like that's a sad way to live.
And it's sad that she's really hanging on to what she perceived as like a very sincere like statement on behalf of Ray in the counseling session.
Counseling? You mean life coach?
Yes, sorry.
I thought it was totally forced. And they're showing this moment, we've seen it like three times now, where Karen goes over and takes Ray's hand. And they're showing it like it's this beautiful moment. But I totally saw it as Karen like, give me your hand. There's cameras here. And we see it so many times. And it makes me feel worse every time we watch it.
But she's really holding on to that.
Yeah.
She thinks that it's healed the relationship.
So we think we're going to get into Karen and Ray's relationship. We're ready. But the tides turn.
When Candace announces that she's going to start trying for a family.
And this pisses Ashley off like no one's business.
This was a very bold choice by Ashley to get this livid as a sort of like a preamble to what she's going to say to Candace next episode.
This felt like a very clunky transition on Ashley's part.
Ashley said in her talking head, I'm going to be a real bitch. The karma train really does come around and it's pulling into my station.
See, I didn't get that. That's not karma. That's you not learning a lesson from somebody else. So Candace was rude to Ashley when Ashley was trying to get pregnant because she had a miscarriage. She implied that Michael was faking crying, which is pretty gross, Candace.
Yeah, coming from the big fake eye dabber, Candace.
That's why she thought it was fake, yeah. Alex. No napkin work. That was the problem.
Well, what it is that Candace was completely unsupportive of Ashley while Ashley tried to make a family. Ashley's trying to give her a little taste of her own medicine, but then has a hard time doing it. Be like, I want to be supportive of you.
So one of my favorite exchanges at the table is between Ashley, Candace, and then Robin. Ashley says, Candace, when I was trying to start a family, you really hurt me. And then Robin says, Ashley, you were my Candace. You hurt me when I was trying to deal with my family. And they flash to Candace, who's looking very smug, like, yeah, Ashley, you hurt somebody. It's like, did you not just hear Robin? You are the standard for being a shit. They are using you like an adjective, a title.
Robin says the best thing about Candace, though. Ashley says,
this is amazing. I know what you're gonna say. It's so good.
Yeah. So good. Ashley says, well, would I go on social media and bash you? And Robin says, she would do that to anybody. That's a character flaw of hers.
And Candace is like, it is.
So good. But then our dear editors of Potomac give us some of the things that Candace has posted on social media about Ashley, and here they are.
Okay, let's hear it. I'm ready.
In regards to Ashley and her husband Michael's relationship, Candace has said, where your income, Roach, you and your overseer, your concubine allowance, and bedwench.
Bedwench. All caps. Bedwench.
Bedwench.
This is Stassi levels of creativity. You know, there's no like swear words. These are like, she's on a thesaurus being like, what else can I call her?
I think it just comes natural to her throwing out these horrible zingers on social media.
You can see that Candace, as much as I hate to admit it, Candace has grown through her therapy sessions, even though the one that we saw did not seem promising.
She even tells us her strategy. Like what she's doing in her head. She's trying not to be so aggressive during her conversations. Like she actually says, like, I'm not going to be as aggressive.
She does it. But then Ashley kind of doesn't back down. And it's, even though Ashley has a point, she's kind of, you know, already beating a dead horse. Like you're at the point where it's kind of like, all right, Ashley, like this is the hill you're going to die on. Like Candace is going to give you another opportunity. Just keep it in for a little bit.
But we later learn why Ashley's so reworked up about all of the things that Candace has done to her in the past. And that is because Ashley is writing a statement attacking Candace's character on behalf of Monique.
And I was happy they kind of revisited that because I was confused when they kind of dropped the hint last episode because Ashley was in the bathroom during the fight. But this isn't about the fight. This is about establishing
butter knife gate.
A pattern of
butter knife gate. This is about establishing that this is a pattern. Thank you, Alex. A pattern of behavior when Candace was wearing a butter knife in Ashley's face. Was Ashley pregnant at that time?
No.
Okay. Now I couldn't remember. So I mean, Candace kind of doesn't have a leg to stand on. But I wish this wasn't the hill that Ashley.
But Ashley's writing this character assassination about Candace because she owes Monique a favor, and Giselle put it very eloquently like that. And then Ashley herself said that Chris's, Monique's husband Chris's brother and father saw Michael grab the Bravo employee's butt and went in and wrote a statement for Ashley saying, "We didn't see anything. That didn't happen."
Yeah.
So Ashley had to have Monique's back because Monique did her a solid. And I'm really curious why Monique did that. And I think it's just Chris did the solid, Monique's husband, Chris. I don't think Monique would have done this for Ashley. Yeah. I think Chris just doesn't want to get involved, or Chris likes Michael. I don't know. Maybe there's a bro code going on here, which is dark.
I am not looking forward to what is coming up in the next episode where Candace, dressed like a dominatrix, screaming at Ashley.
You're not looking forward to that? I cannot wait to see how, because the tone is going to switch so jarringly between.
She's dressed like a sexy leather bunny, by the way.
I'm so excited. And they're like unwrapping dildos. I'm here for it.
What I'm not looking forward to is that I keep trying to like Wendy, but I know I'm not going to like her next episode because of the preview we get of her scolding Ashley for this.
Because it's Candace and Ashley having an aside, and who's sitting there making it her business? Wendy. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what kills me too, is because Wendy can be really, really fun, but I don't know. When she I like that she's passionate and I like that she takes things on as like 110%. But this has literally nothing to do with her. So I wish she would kind of take a step back.
Something I'm looking forward to in the reunion is the fact that Robin outed Karen for years past, saying that Ray's penis is shriveled and dried up and that she hates it.
Yes.
I guess I'm not looking forward to that.
Karen hates Ray's dick.
So I'm worried how what's not a counselor?
Life coach?
I'm worried how a life coach is going to handle this in the future.
Yes, me too. This might be above a life coach pay grade.
Yeah, above their certification.
Well, with that, let's get into Southern Charm.
All right.
It's a sad Southern Charm. This week on Southern Charm, instead of a we had a because COVID has begun. I have to say, hearing COVID warning announcements sounds so much scarier when they're coming from a Southern accent. Schools will be shut down and bars and restaurants will be closed.
I thought someone else with better voice is gonna have to go over this, but I thought it sounded so much more genteel. Ladies and gentlemen, today I do declare the state of emergency for South Carolina.
So fun.
Whitney would be the toilet paper hoarder too, by the way.
Craig walking outside Patricia's house, like jumping up to look over the fence, was the funniest thing.
Wanna play video games?
It's like, and no, that go image away.
Alone is like insane to me, those two hanging out.
Whitney chucks toilet paper and he's like, I can't believe I ran out.
It's like, I didn't get any food, but I got tons of alcohol.
We learned this episode that Craig is a early COVID denier / conspiracy theorist who Shep dubs as the Alex Jones of Southern Charm.
Which I had forgotten that this was an aspect to Craig. Otherwise, still the sweetest boy in the Bravo universe, but that's a pretty big flaw.
The best Bravo boy would be a conspiracy theorist.
We open up with Catherine slowly getting her house ready to move her children out of Thomas's house and into her own house. Her new house is very cute. All the ladies show up slowly because Catherine isn't there. And then they get let in.
Madison's appearance surprises Catherine. Wasn't that weird?
Yeah, she opens the door and she's like, hi.
And she's like, let's get organized. And then Catherine goes, are you serious?
Catherine's surprised Madison is there. But Madison appears to be surprised. Catherine is there? The whole interaction was very weird. And then I thought the only person I trust to help me set up my house was Leva, who brings a stud finder and is using it on the walls. And the other women are, what's that? What's that for?
Oh, your husband's going to be impressed.
Leva knows what a stud is.
Do you know how I know that this is a group of women setting up this house and not a group of men? Because there was not one oh, it's a stud finder, beep, beep, beep joke. No one's waving the stud finder over themselves. I was waiting for it. It didn't happen.
Thumbs up. Not a fuck you. Good joke, thumbs up.
Oh, speaking of thumbs up, though, when John Frinkle is setting up his son's room and he's trying to put the fitted sheets on the bed and he gets the fitted sheet mixed up, which we all do every time without fail, at least three times as you try to make your bed, John Frinkle goes, fucking shitballs on my teeth.
That was insane.
A phrase I've never heard.
Certainly not a phrase that would warrant that shirt that he wears the whole episode, his dad joke.
Oh, did you see that Shep was also wearing the same dad?
Well, yes. Well, it's a Shep Gear shirt, right?
Oh, is it?
I believe so. Because I know that in the Shep Gear line, he has like dad joke shirts. I just haven't seen that particular, that image.
Oh my gosh.
Only possible explanation for them both wearing the same shirt immediately following each other's scenes.
Yes.
Pringle is crazy.
Well, let's talk about that. The episode name. Single and Ready to Pringle.
But she's not single and ready to Pringle. Person in question.
He is.
Madison.
Yeah.
He can't be ready to Pringle. He is Pringle.
Exactly.
Well, hey, take it up with Bravo. They named the episode.
So I have a question. We ended last episode with watching the boys' night. Why did we not see Madison show up to boys' night? Why did we not see boys' night make it back to the house? Why did we not see Pringle turn to Madison being like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to steal you away from Austin.
The Bravo crew members got to sleep too. They can't keep up with these boys.
I am disappointed that Bravo cameras were not in Austin's house, but I didn't mind hearing the story from nine different perspectives.
Yeah. And we got a great moment of Leva trying to, the ways that she's faltered so far is trying to get too involved in the drama. So when she's like, I bet that turned you on, huh? In reaction to Pringle kind of putting Austin in his place during that fight, felt so forced.
I loved it. I was like, get it, Leva.
My favorite perspective, it was definitely Madison's.
Same.
Oh, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot to read into with her reaction.
She's not yet single, but she's ready to Pringle.
The story being that late into the night, Madison, Austin, Catherine, and Pringle went back to Austin's. And while the four were like kind of hanging out and talking, Pringle was all up in Madison's ear, snuggling, they say.
I have the hots for you.
I have the hots for you. I'm so conflicted. Like, I want to be friends with Austin, but like, I'm also so into you. And Austin can clearly hear this entire thing.
Well, Austin's
and
sitting Austin, on the same couch.
yells at Pringle and tells him to like leave the house. But then Pringle retaliates. He goes, don't talk to me like that, boy. In a way.
And then Austin sits back down. Sits back and down. How does Madison tell this story? Like, oh my God, this guy was disrespecting my boyfriend in his house. Oh no.
Mm-mm.
She's like, and then Pringle says this. And then Austin just sat down like a little bitch.
Pringle stands up and uses his dad voice.
No, his daddy voice.
Not his dad joke voice.
Austin, you better sit down. In his own home.
The fear you can imagine in Austin's eyes.
Austin's days are numbered.
Oh, yeah.
We cut back to earlier in the night before they go to Austin's where Pringle's talking to Madison at the bar and he goes, first time I saw you, I thought you were smoking hot. In like a really disgusting drunken way. I still don't get it.
You don't? He's a hunk.
I mean,
he's kind of gross.
They haven't seen him with his shirt off, you know, that we saw last episode. So all they're going,
oh, yeah, I forgot.
All they're going off is like his like intense dad energy, which they all seem to be really into.
Yeah.
Well, Madison loves the fight over her. She is just exactly where she wants to be right now.
And also Patricia's in her ear and Patricia has this weird hold over Madison. Also over Pringle.
And Madison and Pringle both want Patricia's approval. Mm-hmm.
Patricia hates Austin.
Coronavirus took one beautiful thing away from us because I was very looking forward to Patricia's annual Boys Only.
I was too. That
plus
was a bummer.
Patricia night. And it's been canceled due to coronavirus.
So everybody's kind of learning about Corona, except for one person who seems to taking it very seriously. Shep. I'm charmed by him. I really like him. I know he's been crazy in other seasons, but like because this is my intro to Southern Charm, I'm delighted by him. Am I wrong?
No, you're catching him at a good moment.
He's very
charming.
He's also very on the pulse politically, like online, as opposed to the rest of the cast. He's super progressive compared to the rest of them.
Okay. You mean not like Craig, who says, I don't believe in coronavirus, but don't drink the tap water. I'm
Craig
not
doesn't
to
seem
get
to
it.
Have any political values whatsoever. So that doesn't surprise me.
So all over the place. Do you know what the theme of this episode was? Boomers not understanding camera angles. We watch Shep FaceTiming his parents, and so close up you can't see them. And then Madison later on is FaceTiming Patricia, who keeps hanging up on her and is holding it so close all you could see is like a chunk of her nose and her eyebrow.
I'm at an auction right now. I gotta go. Sky is calling.
Who's that? Huh? And even Pringle shows off his dad energy when trying to show his sister the sheets he bought for his sons. Instead of pressing the flip button on his camera, holds the camera around like my mom does to show things.
Dad energy.
Well, we need to talk about the big breakup of this episode. Craig and Austin.
Yeah. Oh,
that was upsetting.
We get a romantic flashback of them staring into each other's eyes, drinking out of the same pineapple beverage.
Sorry, I just can't live here anymore. I gotta rent a place for $3,900 a month, I guess.
Oh my gosh, it's so expensive. But he's on the same street as Whitney now, so.
Oh yeah, his
and
best
Patricia.
Friend out of nowhere.
But I'm pretty sure they spend most of shutdown together, so I think they quarantine together.
In our preview of the next episode, things are opening back up. So did Bravo leave and like pack up?
Oh yeah, they think they were forced to stop production.
That's wild.
Plus, what content are you going to get if Shep won't leave his house?
Very true. So I think next episode, we're going to jump ahead to what? Summer?
Yeah, that would make
sense. I just think it's funny, though, that when Craig is Googling coronavirus and talking about how he has to take this a little more seriously and says, I guess this is a thing, behind him is a game of beer pong just completely set up on his table for the night before.
And it's going to stay that way for months.
Because his assistant can't go tell him to clean it up because she has to quarantine.
Oh, so speaking of the theme of this podcast episode of Bravo spending time, places, watching people ordering, how insane was that ice cream sequence at the end with Madison and Austin and Hudson?
Oh, that gold digger order was mean.
It almost made me think that wasn't an actual item on the menu. Because it was...
Is that why the worker looks
the
so producer
is disgusted? Like, took a little bit of pager's tape and wrote gold digger on there.
Just so Austin can have this little like slight dig at Madison.
So to set the scene, Austin, Madison, and her son all go to an ice cream parlor and they're all ordering sundaes. And Austin very aggressively orders a ice cream that may or may not have been on the menu called the gold digger sundae, looks at Madison and says, that's what Patricia would want you to be. How is she supposed to feel when you say stuff like that? She's supposed to have fuel.
She's fine. She orders a corn dog in response.
I also feel like the scene established that Austin does not spend much time with Madison's son.
Or then he's like, so Pringle was like all over you. And that very adult, inappropriate conversation. And the producers do a close up of Hudson's face, which is just covered in ice cream. And Hudson's like doing nervous eyes back and forth between his mom and Austin.
Cool. Hudson and Madison are cool. Do you see the way they enter that ice cream shop with their shades on? They're cool. I love them.
Poor Austin. He just can't compete.
Cool guy.
Do you know who's as cool?
Huh.
As Madison and Hudson. Huh. One John.
Okay,
Pringle.
I like Pringle now. I think he's really funny. His when his little shopping spree with Craig in preparation for the gentleman's dinner at Patricia's that we don't see.
So sad.
Craig confronts him and says, hey, so are you gonna like lay off hitting on Madison like in so that you and Austin can be friends? And like, Pringle's delivery is incredible. He just looks at him and goes, TBD. And he
so
won
cool.
me over. He won me over with that. I like him. Woo, he's about the show needs
I'm
him,
bored.
I think. Oh God, Shep did the worst. So there are certain jokes I cannot hear. One of them is if like something crazy is happening to you and someone goes, am I getting punked? That's the worst joke of all time.
You mean reference to 2004 Ashton Kutcher MTV reality show, Punked?
But people, you know, people do that. You see that joke in movies and stuff where people go, am I getting punked right
it's
now?
So dated.
Horrible. Another big offender is, it's a new one, but it's a recent one, is the whole, hope I don't get Corona from this when you're drinking a Corona beer. Shep commits this offense this episode,
but
and it's
Alex,
depressing to see.
This took place in March. That could have been the original.
It was already. Joke. It was old the minute it came out. So sorry, Shep.
You guys said that Shep's big personality trait is that he's well read, and he was such a ding dong. I didn't see it coming. But then when he's like, "I hate to be like Oedipus here," and I'm like, "All right, where's this going?" He's like, "But she reminds me of my mom." I was like, "Wait, that actually worked. I didn't see it coming. I'm gonna be honest."
He loves little literary references.
I didn't think he could pull it off, so that was a fun surprise for me. I think it's time for awards.
All right.
Mm-hmm. No Miranda Pump rules, right?
No, but Randall, Lala's man, did get in trouble. There are multiple lawsuits against his production company. And I think the WGA was finally like, no one can work for the WGA, the Writers Guild of America. It made an official statement saying like that nobody can like work for his production company that's like a part of their union, just because like it's so marred by controversy and like pay disputes from former employees.
Whoa.
And this is a guy that's produced some like what top kind level of disputes, stuff. Like, I guess just like maybe like not paying that well.
Okay, so like money issues.
Yeah. Interesting. There have been multiple. Okay. I mean, if you go to the Wikipedia article for his production company, it's just half of it is lawsuits.
Never a good sign.
It's and half of like his output as a producer is like straight to DVD Bruce Willis action movies. Okay. That are made on the cheap and cut corners, so that like a lot of the money goes to like the actors and whatever. But that's the only Vanderpump Rules info I got this week.
Wow, didn't get a song, but it got a lawsuit.
Well, he's a director now, and he has a movie coming out with Megan Fox and Bruce Willis and Emile Hirsch. That's set to premiere next year. He directed this.
About what?
Oh, I might have to watch this.
And he...
That sounds amazing.
It's some, like, crime drama where, like, Megan Fox is kidnapped and Emile Hirsch and Bruce Willis have to save her.
All right.
The weird thing about him is he also produces Martin Scorsese movies. Oh. He produced his Martin Scorsese's last two movies. He's a weird guy.
Well, geez Louise, Alex, you dropped a bomb on us.
But I couldn't fit all that into a Miranda Pump Rules song.
No song, just the bomb.
Lala's man.
A lot of people be coming for Lala's man.
A whole union.
All right, let's get into awards. My award this week is the Teddy Mellencamp for Storyline Award. Named after former Beverly Hills housewife, recently fired Beverly Hills housewife, Teddy Mellencamp, who would interject herself randomly into storylines that had nothing to do with her to try to create a storyline in hopes that she wouldn't be fired. Not successfully. I give award this to Miss Whitney of Salt Lake City, who is just sticking herself wherever she possibly can in hopes that she doesn't get put on the chopping block, but I fear for her. She will reach the same fate as Miss Mellencamp.
She's worried that, like Trump, she will be a one-term housewife.
I agree.
She will be, I hope. A deserved award.
A deserved award. Do we have any housewives that were an original housewife that lasted one season? I can't think of any that were only in... No one from New York. Everybody made it to season two.
I think Katie from Potomac was one season, but I'd have to take to the internet.
Okay. Alex, your award.
All right. Are you too familiar with Glengarry Glen Ross, the film? Well, in this film, Alec Baldwin famously plays a character named Blake, who tries to motivate a team of real estate salesmen with the mantra ABC, always be closing. I'm sure you know this.
Are you referring to Catherine?
So my Glengarry Glen Ross motivational acronym award, ABC, goes to Catherine Dennis for saying always be creating content, which she thinks is ABC, not ABCC, ABC.
Poor Catherine, this season's another not going to be kind. Award.
No, I think, yeah, next great. Episode, lay in on her. All right, my Housewife Award is the Housewife of Reason Award. And I'm giving this award to two housewives this week. Karen Huger, you are accepting this award along with Heather Gay. Mm-hmm. I'm liking these housewives. I love that they are ladies of reason. And every single housewife franchise needs one of these. And these two are filling the slot for their city. And thank you, ladies, for your service.
Julia, quickly, who in New York is the voice of reason?
This last season, it was Luann.
All right.
I know.
But so it hasn't always. They definitely trade hats around for that. But that you always need a straight woman?
Yeah. You need somebody. You need an audience plant. And Leah kind of was until she started throwing tiki torches. And then we were like, oh.
Leah, can you pick this one up for us?
She's like, you got it. Who is it in Beverly Hills right now? It's not Kyle. Kyle was for a long time. It's definitely not
Teddy
Kyle anymore.
Teddy tried really, really hard to make it her.
By declaring it was her, she said, as the moral compass.
You know who
this,
I give it to Beverly Hills this season? I give it to Dorit.
Yeah, Dorit did get it. God, I hate Teddy so much.
Dorit was the housewife of reason, and everyone loved her this year. I know, it's a good award to win.
Mm-hmm. And she got to open a book of the boo.
The lemon room.
The lemon room at book of the boo. I'm so happy Teddy's gone. I just really can't pepper that in as much as I would like to. Her dad's happy she's off the show. Same here, bitch. Same here.
Same zoos.
Well, thank you two for joining me. I'm so excited to be with you in person next week.
Oh,
COVID safe.
The quality of the audio will be terrible, but the quality of life, I mean, come on.
Grand. So next week we'll be doing a Southern Charm, Potomac, and then a Salt Lake all live. Our plan is to watch them and then take an intermission and record after each episode.
Instantly.
So all of our hot takes will be fresh off the press.
We will not have had what we normally do, a week to stew on the right, very comprehensive thoughts.
Yeah, not me watching them hours before we recording. Well, I'm so excited to see you guys.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Until we meet again.
Until we meet again.
Don't know where.
Don't know where.
At Elizabeth's house. We'll meet again next Sunday.
You can catch new episodes of the Don't Be All Like Uncool podcast every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Podbean. You can also follow us on Instagram at Like Uncool Podcast. Remember to rate, subscribe, review, and mention it all.